Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, as well as on the WDIY listening app, and podcasts of prior programs are available on many streaming services. Today is September 25th, 2024. The markets were mixed today, with the Dow closing down at 41,914, the NASDAQ at 18,082, and that was up, and the S&P down at 5,722. Tonight, charitable giving options. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Bob and Cindy are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down. If you have longer questions or something more complicated, you can certainly email those through the website yourfinancialchoices.com, as well as any show ideas too. I appreciate show ideas. So again, tonight's topic, options for charitable giving. It's a frequent topic that I like to cover, especially during a pledge drive, which starts next week. But we do have a buyback this week to try to shorten our pledge drive over the next couple of weeks. If people, you know, are interested in, you know, contributing early, I'm going to certainly talk about some ideas and some ways to do that. And I hope it'll be beneficial, not just for you, for WDIY, but for charitable giving in general in the community. And some charitable giving is just for charitable purposes, meaning you may not receive a tax benefit for it. It's just something you are compelled to do. You're philanthropic. You like to support the organizations that are in your community that are providing, you know, services or providing, you know, it might be educational or religious benefits in some way. So there are various reasons why people like to give to charities. I'm going to talk about what that means exactly. But sometimes you can give and be philanthropic and actually receive a tax benefit from it. So if you can, or if maybe you aren't someone who normally gets a tax benefit because you don't itemize deductions anymore, is there a way that you could still get a tax break for your charitable giving? So I'm hoping to cover some of that tonight. When we think about charitable giving, I grew up always hearing about and, you know, people talking about your time, your volunteer time, and that has evolved into the time, talent, and treasure words we may hear when we talk about charitable giving, your time, talent, and treasure. So simply, if someone does not have the means to financially support an organization that they, you know, really love and want to, you can often volunteer your time. For example, WDIY, we have probably, 100 volunteers or so, and they're volunteering their time. I would guess, and I bet, that a lot of these volunteers probably also give some of their treasure. But time is really important to many nonprofit organizations as well. I know for years I, you know, volunteered at the church where I would do bookkeeping for the Capital Campaign Fund. I would help with, you know, gift certificates they were selling to raise funds for, you know, the education for the school. So that was time when, you know, when I may not have had as much treasure early on. talent. You can volunteer your talent if, you know, again, I'm an accountant and I could help with some accounting and bookkeeping. That was a way to use both your time and your talent. And then, of course, there are people who may not have the time, may not have the talent, but certainly might have the treasure. So the treasure being, you know, assets. And those assets could come in an array of options of charitable giving. Assets could be cash. Assets could be, you know, donations like clothing, furniture, vehicles, artwork, something that may require an appraisal. So not all assets that we want to give away are treated the same. There are certain rules around the different kinds of assets we could give. And of course, there are people who give appreciated securities, appreciated stock, meaning they've made an investment. Maybe their investment over time has made a lot of money, and it's a way for them to donate, maybe not their cash, but their securities, their stock, their mutual fund, whatever it might be. And there's rules around that as well. We can even go further with different kinds of assets for people to donate. Some people may donate real estate. Some people may donate, you know, easements on real estate, meaning they don't maybe want to donate the real estate altogether, but they will donate the development rights, meaning they're not going to develop it. So they put the land in a conservation easement. So there, it can get quite sophisticated. You could also set up various different kinds of charitable trust. That's a little bit more complicated than the topic tonight that we're going to cover, but there are any number of means of giving. So if you are someone who has philanthropic intent and perhaps don't have the treasure yet, you can certainly consider your time and talent. And there are so many, you know, just good feelings benefits you get from that, of course, helping the organization, but also it's a great way to meet other people who have similar interest in supporting the organizations that are important to you through those volunteer opportunities. It's a great way to meet people. So time, talent, and then, of course, treasure, which we're probably going to focus on tonight. I will add, though, just kind of just to clarify, when we talk about time and talent, I do want to point out, because we do get the questions from time to time where people will say, well, if I'm volunteering my time and it's worth, you know, $10 an hour, can I deduct that? No, that doesn't work. You're doing it by the graciousness of your, you know, your heart and your giving in giving your time. You cannot take a deduction for the value of your time. There are circumstances where you may be able to deduct mileage if you're driving for the nonprofit organization and they're like, for example, like Meals on Wheels. Now, again, there is mileage. There's a limit on how much you can deduct. But even if you may qualify for something like that, you still may not be able to deduct it if you don't itemize your deductions. So don't always assume that everything you give is going to give you a tax break, because it may not. And what I mean by that is with the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act changes, the tax legislation changes, where they raised the standard deduction and lowered some of the income tax deductions we could take on Schedule A when we file our tax returns, so many more people no longer itemize. So if you no longer itemize, you may not be getting the benefit from those charitable deductions that you may have at one point. Okay? So when you're giving, typically you want to be giving for your own philanthropic desire. It may not be a tax deduction. May not be. But there are ways to still save on income tax, even if you're not getting an income tax deduction. So it depends on what kind of assets and how we do it and how we fund it. So I will be talking about that when we come back from our break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And we'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Are you planning on getting rid of your car? Why not donate it to a good cause? WDIY accepts donations of used cars, trucks, vans, motorcycles, and other types of vehicles, even boats, and the proceeds will support your favorite programs. WDIY's vehicle donation program makes it easy to give. The pickup is free, and your gift is tax deductible. For more information, call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here in WDIY. We're talking about charitable giving options this evening. If you have questions, and it can be off topic as well, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We have Cindy standing by to take your calls. And you can talk live on air with me or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. So when we talk about charitable contributions, I think it's also important to mention that if we pull back and say you're not, you know, itemizing deductions, therefore you wouldn't in essence get a deduction for making a charitable contribution on your tax return, I said there are other ways to still save taxes. So I do want to talk about that, but I do want to also stress that we have to start with, is it a charitable organization that you're making the contribution to? You should always double check that. We might think naturally and obviously that, you know, charitable organizations, typically churches, educational institutions, you know, well-known organizations like the United Way, American Heart Association, American Red Cross. You know, there are certain organizations that we just naturally know, but there is a way to check if you have a more obscure charitable entity that you really like in your, it's not as familiar, you can check on the IRS's website, irs.gov, irs.gov/TEOS. I'm sure that stands for tax exempt organizations. So irs.gov/TEOS. You can check by going there. There's an online tool which will help you search for qualified organizations. And then the other thing I want to mention is, in general, deductible as charitable contributions, money or property. Remember, property would include, as I mentioned, you know, whether it's, you know, household goods, furniture, clothing, could be securities, meaning stocks, bonds, real estate, that type of thing. Money or property you give to churches, synagogues, temples, mosques, and other religious organizations, federal, state, and local governments, if your contribution is solely for public purposes, for example, a gift to reduce the public debt or maintain a public park. Nonprofit schools and hospitals, the Salvation Army, American Red Cross, CARE, Goodwill, United Way, Scouts, Boys and Girls Clubs of America, etc., war veterans groups. Expenses paid for a student living with you, sponsored by a qualified organization. Out-of-pocket expenses when you serve a qualified organization as a volunteer. So that's just kind of some general guidelines. And this is from the IRS's publication 526, Charitable Contributions. And what they highlight as not deductible as charitable contributions is property, money or property given to civic leagues, social and sports clubs, labor unions, chambers of commerce, foreign organizations except certain Canadian, Israeli, and Mexican charities, groups that are run for personal profit, groups whose purpose is to lobby for laws or changes, homeowners associations, individuals, political groups, or candidates for public office, cost of raffles or bingo or lottery tickets. I think a lot of people get confused by that. They think if they're buying a raffle at church that it would be a charitable deduction. It's not, because it's considered a game of chance. Dues, fees, or bills paid to country clubs, lodges, fraternal orders, or similar groups. Tuition, value of your time or services, which I already touched on, and value of blood given to a blood bank. So those are not deductible, and we really need to be clear on that, because there is a difference between a 501c3 qualified charitable organization and some other type of 501 organizations, which may be social clubs, as they've mentioned here, civic league, social, sports clubs. Those may be non-profit, but they're not 501c3s within the terminology of a qualified charitable organization qualifying for a deduction. Okay, so then when we talk about what we're going to donate, if we go on the assumption that we're not going to be able to itemize, and I said there would still be other ways you could save income tax, two things stand out. One is you could still donate appreciated securities, even if you're not itemizing, and may benefit from income taxes, because if you donate appreciated securities, you don't have to sell it first and recognize any gain and pay the income tax. So let's pretend in my story, I want to donate $5,000 of a stock to the church or the educational institution, and I know that $5,000 is not enough to tip me over to allow me to itemize deductions. But I have this $5,000 stock. I haven't wanted to sell it because it's at a big gain, and I just don't want that income on my return. And I've been giving my charity, my 501c3, $5,000 a year every year. I always do it. Yes, I know I don't get a tax deduction for it, but I'm philanthropic. I want to do it. What can I do? Well, we could donate this highly appreciated security. It's been held for, you know, long term. That might not even matter in this circumstance, but I don't want to pay the tax on the gain. Let's pretend I paid $1,000 for it. It's worth $5,000 today. That's a $4,000 gain. I can make that contribution to the charity direct. You usually have to ask the charity, the charitable organization, for a brokerage information so that your broker can do a transfer. Usually it's done direct from your account to the entities, the charitable entities account. Boom, you move $5,000 over. You didn't have to pay income tax on that gain. So $4,000 of gain, and if that gain would have been taxed at 15%, I can't think today, that would be $600 of federal tax. And then, of course, you might have state tax as well. And the state tax, depending on what it is, could be another couple $100. So even though you don't itemize, you could have saved income tax on not having to recognize the gain. It sounds fairly simple, and it's pretty cool. You get to save the income tax on it. Great. You got to save income tax without even having to itemize. So that is appreciated securities. You avoid the income tax. Another way that one can save income tax without itemizing is if you're 70 and a half or older and you have an IRA. This does not apply to 401ks, what I'm about to tell you. It only applies to individual retirement accounts, IRAs, and if you are already age 70 and a half. 70 and a half might sound familiar to some of you. For people who understand that there's a required minimum distribution on retirement accounts, and it used to be age 70 and a half, but they've changed the required minimum distribution age a couple times. It's gone from 70 and a half to 72 to 73. But what they did not change or modify was the age where you can make a qualified charitable distribution from your retirement account without having to pay income tax on it. But you just have to be careful about how you do it. So if you are age 70 and a half and you want to make a charitable contribution, and let's pretend you've been doing it and you've been writing the check out of your bank account every year, you may or may not be tapping your retirement account yet. You might be tapping your retirement account, even if you don't have to. Some people have to tap it early for cash flow. But once you reach age 70 and a half, if you are fulfilling some charitable intent but not benefiting from itemizing, you could certainly request your custodian to make the check a distribution from your IRA directly to the charity. So I might have ABC Charity. I say, hey, custodian, I have an IRA. I'm 70 and a half. Please write a check for $5,000 out of my IRA account to ABC Charity. And it would be an income tax-free distribution. I'll tell you how that works when we come back from our break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY. Podcasts of prior shows are also available on WDIY.org, at yourfinancialchoices.com, and on many streaming services. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And Cindy's standing by for calls. You can talk live on air with me or off air. You can just give your question to Cindy and she'll jot it down and Bob will bring it in to me. Back to charitable giving. So I said you could still get tax breaks even without having to itemize. And I was giving the example of the qualified charitable distribution. That's what you call it, QCD, which goes with an RMD. So required minimum distribution increased. QCD age did not increase, still age 70 and a half. You can do a qualified charitable distribution directly from your IRA to charity. Check should be written to the charity. Here's what's going to happen, though, at tax time. If you did, for example, $5,000, you're going to get a 1099-R tax document next, you know, January 31st, reflecting that you took a $5,000 taxable distribution from your IRA. And you say, hey, Lori, what are you talking about? I thought you told me I could do a qualified charitable distribution and my custodian reported it as taxable and you told me it wasn't. Well, you have to do the homework. The charity does not do that homework for you. They have written the check to the charity for $5,000. Typically, you are the one delivering the check and getting the receipt and the proof that you've made that contribution. And therefore, at tax time, you can code the distribution as a QCD. And if you have software or if your tax preparer is doing it through software, they just code that it was a QCD, how much went to charity, and it automatically is not reflected as taxable. So in the left-hand side of the line item for IRAs, it says $5,000. For the right-hand side, taxable portion would be zero in this story. What I like even better than that, though, is if you're going to do that every year, that is a great way to do it anyway, pre-required minimum distribution age. But what I really like is you could bunch that up, meaning you're already 70 and a half. If you have a required minimum distribution at age 73, and let's pretend your required minimum distribution is $15,000. Well, in my little story here, at 70 and a half, just skip it. At 70, you know, one or two, skip it. You might be able to skip 3 years of $5,000 and then do the whole $15,000 to the charity and not pay any income tax versus a $15,000 required minimum distribution at age 73, $5,000 annual contribution to the charity would still leave $10,000 taxable income to you. So it's just another way to kind of bunch it when you get close to that age 73. I've had circumstances where clients will say, Lori, I do my normal annual pledge of, you know, $6,000 and they have a capital campaign fund now. And my capital campaign is $10,000. Well, if this person is 71 or 72, And they're going to have a large required minimum distribution. I definitely say, hey, talk to the church. Let them know you're going to do it in year two. And they usually understand. They're all about it. You know, they're still going to get some money. And that way you lower your income on your tax return by the amount of qualified charitable distribution. There are also different ways to do those. You can do it as I have given as an example, where you contact the custodian and say, write the check for $5,000 or whatever it might be. You could also potentially have a checkbook tied to your IRA to write checks directly to the charity. It gets a little tricky because you certainly don't want to accidentally go write a check at the grocery store or buy a new car with your IRA. That would be an income taxable event for sure, and you have to be able to track it. So it gets a little tricky. I have sophisticated clients who do it. It works really well because they know what they're doing, and it's all part of the, you know, the planning process. But that is a way to do it where you have smaller amounts and you are writing the check then directly to the charity yourself. You just have to make sure the charity cashes the check before the end of the year. So if you are going to go that direction, you just have to have more oversight of it yourself. You have to monitor it, make sure those checks get cashed. Don't wait till December 31st like you might do, you know, from your personal checking account. If you're doing it from an IRA, those checks have to clear before year end. So you just have to really be aware of it. But there are lots of giving options in those scenarios that I mentioned, giving appreciated securities and or the qualified charitable distribution. If you want to get a deduction on your tax return, there are some other strategies that we talk about with clients, and that could offer an opportunity of giving either cash lump sum or larger positions of appreciated securities. And what we talk about there is bunching the deduction. So let's pretend you're pre-age 70 and a half. So, Lori, I don't have that option. I'm not 70 and a half. I'm only 65. And I like to give $10,000 a year to, you know, my alma mater. And what did, how old did I say you were? Let's pretend you're 65. And I give $10,000 a year to my alma mater. And I'm not, you know, age 70 and a half for another 5 years. That's $50,000 of giving, Lori, and I'm not going to get any kind of deduction for it. Well, I might say, okay, you can't do it through your IRA. What about appreciated securities? Do you have appreciated securities? If we find that you have appreciated securities, we might pick some highly appreciated ones that need to be trimmed anyway, and we could bunch those deductions. We could transfer $50,000 worth of stock to what we call, or either directly to the charity and be done, and you tell the charity, hey, that's my 5 years of giving. I've done it. I've front-loaded it. This is my year of retirement. I'm still working. I'm in a higher tax bracket. I need the deduction, so I'm going to do it a big chunk this year. And you do it at once, and I always like to let the charity know if there's someone who some of the smaller organizations may, you know, rely on some of these contributions. So you just say, hey, you know, you're not going to hear from me for 5 years. I'm going to just front load it. Okay. You could do that. The other thing is you could also put it in a donor advised fund. So a donor advised fund, you can front load that, and then you control the donations from the donor advised fund, but you over the, you know, X number of years, but you only get that deduction once when you originally do it. So in this story, I'm going to contribute $50,000 to a donor advised fund. And then over the next 5 years, I'll direct the custodian of the donor advised fund to make a contribution to that organization, $10,000 a year. So I get the deduction today. I've bunched it. It makes me eligible for itemizing. I still might not get the full benefit of that deduction, but I'm certainly going to get maybe more, obviously, than I would by just doing those small amounts each year. So in that story, though, there's some other caveats that we have to be aware of. There are some limitations that the IRS gives us when we are itemizing our charitable contributions. So before you get too excited and run out and do this, we have to talk about some of the other limitations that you need to pay attention to and that you need to coordinate. Bottom line, you want to do some planning around this, and there are lots of options, and just be aware of those. And I'm going to talk about what some of those limitations are when we come back from the break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. So here's some limitations we have to be aware of. So we've talked about cash donations. We've talked about personal property, household goods, clothing, appreciated securities, and giving to a 501c organization direct through a qualified charitable distribution and or through a donor advised fund. A donor advised fund itself is considered a charitable organization, but the IRS puts limits on this. So, for example, if I make a cash donation, my cash donation will be limited to 60% of what we call our adjusted gross income. In the old days, we called it page one income because that was always the last line on the page one of the tax return. I still use that phrase. It's adjusted gross income, page one income, adjusted gross income. 60% of that is the limitation for cash. So if my page, my adjusted gross income is $100,000 and I donate $100,000 of cash, my donation is limited to $60,000 for itemizing, for Schedule A itemizing purposes. So I can't write off all of my income when I'm doing charitable giving. So $100,000 of income, 60% limitation for a cash donation. What happens to the rest of that deduction? It carries forward for 5 years until it's used up. Okay, so it's not necessarily lost, but it carries forward. Now, if you never have income for 5 years, then you would lose it, because remember, that same limitation is going to apply. So that's cash. And organizations love cash. So, I mean, I always like, you know, unrestricted for organizations to use it in the areas that they need. And then there are circumstances where restrictions, you know, make sense if there's a particular feature of a charitable organization that you want to make sure you continue to benefit a certain, you know, aspect of it. All right, so 60% limitation on cash. Remember I talked about personal property, clothing, household items. Well, if it's $500 or less, you don't need a separate appraisal. You don't need a separate schedule to report it. It's just $500, not an issue. If it's more than $500, then we have to file a special form called an 8283, a form 8283. If our personal property that we donate is, you're valuing the fair market value at more than $500. And then there's even an additional requirement if that property has a value of more than $5,000. If it's more than $5,000, then you're going to need potentially a qualified appraisal. And what I mean by potentially, obviously stock, like equities that we donate, that has a market value that is typically, you know, the value on the day you give it to the organization, the fair market value of your stock. So you don't need a special appraisal for that. But if you're someone who is donating, you know, a rug or a piece of art or, you know, piece of property that's worth more than $5,000, you need a qualified appraisal. And there's a lot of, you know, rules around that qualified appraisal. Sometimes they're, you know, quite thick. Someone has to determine, you know, identify why they are the qualified appraiser. How did they come up with the value? They have to sign the form. You have to sign the form, and it has to be done timely. So you do want to make sure if you think you're donating something with a lot of value in your mind, and if it's more than $5,000, you're going to need an appraisal to. So make sure that you do that. That's another little qualifier in that regard. As far as appreciated securities, if those securities are long-term, they're held long-term, remember I said you don't have to pay tax on the gain, but they limit that deduction to 30% of adjusted gross income. So you think, oh, yeah, great, I'm going to donate $100,000 of stock and wipe out my $100,000 of income. No, not going to work. 30% of the income, it would be $30,000. You donated $100,000 fair market value stock. You only get the deduction for 30. And let's pay attention. What did I say happens to the rest of it? The $70,000 that wasn't allowed, it carries forward for how long? 5 years. All right. So it's all good part of, you know, planning to be aware of this and understand the limitations, because if you're working with a planner, they might say, hey, yeah, your income's only $100,000, you're donating $100,000, let's put more income on your return and maybe maximize that deduction. Lori, what are you talking about? Why would I put more income on my return? Where would I get that? Well, that's where we start looking at IRA conversions to Roth. It could make sense. We don't want people to lose the carry forward of the charitable deduction if they're limited. Okay. Now, here's another little caveat. And I like to always try to cover, you know, the questions that people don't know to ask. And I don't know who's listening tonight, but maybe this will apply to you. There could be an opportunity where someone may donate appreciated of securities, appreciated property, it could be artwork, it could be something of greater value. And I said it's limited to 30% of the income, of the adjusted gross income. That's if it's long-term held property. It's limited to the 30%. There are certain circumstances where you can make an election to not deduct the fair market value, but use the cost basis as your deduction. So in that circumstance, I'm not benefiting from the, you know, the difference in appreciation that I, you know, I'm getting tax-free. But what it might allow us to do is to maximize the deduction within that five-year period that we otherwise might lose. So there are elections that we could say, don't deduct the fair market value, deduct the cost basis. It's a little bit lower of a deduction, but I get a bigger deduction because it's no longer limited to 30% of the income. It's limited to 50% of the income. So in my story with $100,000 of income, I actually could deduct $50,000 instead of 30. So that is where that would be applicable in a situation where I may not ever have enough income to get that full deduction. So we could make that election and then, you know, look at other ways to put income on the return again, as I mentioned, which could be a conversion. So that's the appreciated securities. I believe I mentioned the same thing happens with the donor advised fund. So if you make a contribution to a donor advised fund, that is also limited to the 30% of the income. All right. So the limits that apply, we have 100% of cash. It was 60%. If we had non-cash contributions, and there's certain 50% limit organizations, so you do have to kind of watch out for the different categories of organizations. There could be a 50%. As I mentioned, the 30% applies to non-cash contributions of capital gain or long-term capital gain property, and then the 30% that might apply for appreciated securities and or to the donor advised fund. Okay. And you can bunch those as well. So that is a way to bunch. Keep in mind, if you are making a contribution of a certain property, maybe you make a donation to an organization for a meal, a dinner, a big event, a gala, And a meal is included in that, or some other type of gift is included in that. If you pay, let's say, $250 for a ticket and you're getting a $50 meal, your $250 is not the donation. And the organization should be giving you a written statement acknowledging the value of the contribution that you made. And usually they'll say no other goods or services were provided, you know, for this gift, so that your accountant or yourself, you know what you're deducting on the tax return, because you cannot take a deduction for where you've received a benefit. And I think people get further confused when they attend maybe a charitable event and there's an auction and you may be bidding on, you know, prizes or baskets or, you know, items that people have donated. So, for example, you go to a charitable event and they're auctioning off or raffling or doing, I forgot, there's different, you know, ways they, silent auctions, that type of thing, where you bid on items. And let's pretend you get all excited, everyone's bidding up some, a week at a beach house, and they bid it up to $2,500. Well, if the value of that beach house was $2,500 anyway to stay there, that's the fair like rent for the week at the beach house, and you just paid $2,500 for the beach house, and you think this is awesome, I just made a charitable contribution of $2,500. Not so, because you received value of $2,500 for your $2,500, what you thought was a charitable contribution. There's no deduction there. So you have to really be, you know, aware of what you're doing and how you're doing your contributions and spending your money. Okay. So charitable contributions, we've talked about cash, we've talked about appreciated securities. You may have heard, and we've seen, you know, we've heard it on this radio station itself about donating cars. People get excited about donating their cars and their boats and the airplanes. And again, you can certainly donate those. You may or may not get a deduction for it simply because the higher standard deduction kind of throws that out of the realm of deductions for most people these days, because usually we're donating our old cars, that kind of thing. So it may not be a deduction for you, so don't get excited. And then over the years, when it used to be, I think when we first heard about these car donations forever ago, people would deduct maybe the blue book value or the what they thought was the fair market value. Well, the IRS changed the rules on that a little bit. Again, if the deduction is more than $500, or if it's less than $500, it's no big deal. If it's more than $500 and you donate a qualified vehicle with a claimed fair market value of more than $500, there's certain rules around that. It says you can deduct the smaller of the gross proceeds from the sale of the vehicle by the organization. So if you make a donation and you think the car is worth $1,000 and the organization accepts that car donation and they sell it for $200, you're going to be limited on what your deduction is. The vehicle's fair market value on the date of the contribution, it's the smaller of the gross proceeds from the sale of the vehicle by the organization or the fair market value. So we said in my story, it was $1,000. They sell it for $200. That would be the deduction. There is a form that the organization is required to provide to you. It's called a 1098C, and you must attach it to your return. Contributions of motor vehicles, boats, and airplanes. That's what it stands for, 1098C. And you should receive that from the organization. I had a client many years ago who donated a car to the church for the pastor to be able to drive. And that is allowed if the organization uses it themselves for, you know, whatever it might have been. Then it was a little bit of a different calculation for the value of it because they weren't selling it. But the organization itself had never had anyone donate a car before, and they didn't know about the 1098C. So we actually had to help them, you know, walk through that, what the requirements were, and get the 1098C for our client. Back then, it was, you know, we were itemizing deductions. Nowadays, again, it's much, much harder. But you do want to make sure that prior to doing that type of donation, that the organization is willing to accept it and that they understand what their requirement is in providing that information to you, that tax document to you. Folks, we're at the last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning public affairs programs weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, politics, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. Public Affairs on 88.1 FM, streaming at WDIY.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. Just a couple other items I want to mention. First of all, if you are interested in understanding charitable contributions, there is a publication provided by the IRS called Publication 526. Back in the day when I first started in accounting, we had these publications all over the office. It was awesome. We'd grab a publication for everything. That's how we had to read and understand. We didn't have the computer. There was no internet. We actually got these, you know, massive publications from the IRS. We had what was called the Package X, which had all the tax forms in it. We'd rip them out and photocopy them. I mean, it was really, you know, you had to learn all the forms. Nowadays, you just enter everything in the software and it seems to go in the right place. But Publication 526, Charitable Contributions, and there's many, many more publications available on the IRS's website, irs.gov. If people have interest in rental properties, in retirement accounts, in starting a business, in partnerships, S-Corps, I mean, it's just amazing. And it's there for you, the general public. So please check that out. As far as charitable contributions, the other thing I did want to mention is you do need receipts. I kind of said it casually in referring to if you've attended a gala and you buy a ticket for, you know, attending the gala, but you should be getting receipts for your other contributions as well. If it's below, I think, 250 is my recollection. They don't necessarily have to provide the receipt, but you still should have some documentation, whether it's a credit card receipt or a canceled check. But ordinarily, if you're giving, you know, contributions that you would be deducting on your tax return, they're usually of such amounts that the organization is going to give you a receipt for it. And make sure you keep that as substantiation for your tax return. There are a number of other ways of charitable giving, as I mentioned, certain charitable trust. I'm not going to talk about those. Those get a little bit more complicated. And it's too much for the show. The other thing, it might be a conservation easement. If you want to preserve land in our area, there are a lot of people who do that. You work with a charitable organization like the Wildlands Conservancy. There are other ones as well that you can agree to put your land, if it makes sense, in the area, to put it into conservation easement. There are a number of ways to do that. You could donate it outright. You could donate just the rights, you know, for development. That's what you're giving up. And there's value in giving up development rights. So you would get a deduction for that. You have to have a qualified appraisal for that as well. You might do it at your passing. You could sell the development rights. So there's something called a bargain sale where you're giving up development rights and the conservation organization may pay you for that, but they may not be paying you the full value. It's called a bargain sale. So there's an element of a charitable gift in there, but there's also an element of a sale. in that transaction. It's a little bit more complicated, but if you're having ideas about your charitable giving and want to explore various ways, there are certainly organizations that help with that. The charities themselves, you know, are quite versed in your options, whether it's a conservation nonprofit organization. It could be a foundation, as we have in the Lehigh Valley, the Lehigh Valley Community Foundation. These are people who understand charitable giving the United Way. Many of these charitable organizations will have development officers on staff who understand the various methods of giving that could work and that could be beneficial to, you know, both organizations. So just be aware of that. But there are conservation easements as well. Something to pay attention to if you are doing any charitable planning, charitable giving, recall I said that you have to maybe kind of watch your tax situation to see when does it make sense. If you have appreciated stock that you want to trim, but you haven't wanted to recognize the gains, that's something to pay attention to. But if you're doing some reasonably high charitable giving, what does it mean to your tax return? Does it make sense? For example, if I'm someone who has a huge IRA and I can do a qualified charitable distribution, what I hadn't mentioned already is there is a limit on how much you can do as a qualified charitable distribution. Most people don't hit this, but it is possible. And that is now $105,000. So if you have a required minimum distribution of, you know, $150,000, you could do $105,000 to a qualified charitable organization and not pay tax on that $105,000. So that's the limit there, and it's each. Now, if my required minimum distribution is $40,000, I could still do $105,000 charitable, you know, contribution. I'm not capped to my RMD amount. I can do up to $105,000. And if my RMD, my required minimum distribution, is 40, it doesn't mean I have to do $40,000 qualified charitable distribution. I can do part of it. So that part that I'm doing as a qualified charitable distribution will count toward my required minimum distribution. If I do my RMD is $40,000 and I only want to do $5,000 to my, you know, alma mater, I can do that, and then I'm only going to recognize $35,000 of taxable income. But be smart about it. Just don't, like, do these things randomly. Plan it out. Think about where you are and what tax bracket you're in and what you have on your tax return. Does it make sense to wait until your required minimum distribution between age 70 and a half and 73 if you're almost there? Look at your tax rates. You know, married, filing, joint, if you stop working at, let's say, 68, there could be several years where you're in a lower income tax bracket because you don't have the RMD yet. Maybe you don't have wages. Does it make sense to give in those years? You know, if you're retiring and it's your last year of work and you're getting severance and you're getting your vacation pay paid out and you're getting bonus and stock options, your income might be really high in that final year. Does it make sense to review and consider your charitable giving in that year rather than in the years that you've dropped down and are in some of the lowest tax brackets? So you kind of want to match up maybe your charitable giving in a year where you have higher income tax potentially. And again, you have the opportunity to bunch those deductions and potentially itemize them for the extra deduction on your tax return by possibly making a contribution to a donor advised fund. And as I mentioned, we do have community foundations where you could also do it to that type of organization. And a community foundation can also do the payout over time, you know, with your guidance as well. So if you're thinking about doing some long-term charitable giving or philanthropy, you can certainly contact any of those organizations to consider what your options might be. I have clients who sponsor students at the local college. You can't get a deduction to sponsor your grandchild, but you could potentially set up scholarships to benefit maybe students who are pursuing a science degree or an accounting degree or whatever it might be. So it's a general contribution to benefit an educational institution, and that would be certainly allowed. And I just love seeing people doing some of this during their lifetime when they can see the benefits of it. But there are people who may not be able to do charitable giving while they're alive, as they're concerned about having enough money for their future medical care. So there might be someone who maybe has more limited assets. Maybe they have $250,000 in the bank. They're concerned if they live another 10 years and they end up in a nursing home, they may run out of money, and they, while they're charitably inclined, may not have the means to be charitable. So you can always say to yourself, well, I can do it at my passing. And when people have retirement accounts, I think that to me is always like the first, the first place I look. If you have IRA monies and you have charitable intent, but you just really don't want to risk that during your twilight years, you could always name a favorite charity a beneficiary on an IRA or on a 401k. You could name them as a beneficiary. They don't have to be 100% beneficiary. They could be a percentage. You could say 25% to this charity and 75% to my favorite nieces and nephews, or 10% or 30%. Or you could separate the accounts. You could have two IRAs. You could have an IRA with $50,000, knowing that you really wanted your college to have $50,000 to fund some scholarships, and you don't care who the rest goes to. So you set up the $50,000, name the school, talk to the school, say, this is my intent, this is what I would like, so that they're on notice. Kind of preserve that IRA account. You could take your required minimum distributions for the total out of the other one, and then the other one could go to, those nieces and nephews who never talk to you, whatever it might be, or your kids who never talk to you. So there are lots of planning opportunities around charitable giving. I will mention that WDIY is having their membership drive coming up next week. This is a buyback week, meaning for those who are inclined to donate in advance, it could shorten our membership drive, which would be really great. And you can donate through the website anytime, really. But this is the time where we encourage you to review your membership, consider renewing and or increasing your contribution, or making just an additional gift to WDIY. As we mentioned earlier, people can give time, talent, and treasure. We really appreciate the treasure. We also love the treasure of our volunteers who are here every week helping with these programs and keeping us on the air with your treasure donations as well. Next week, I will have a guest, Carrie Ward, who is going to be talking about updates in real estate. And next week, we also will start our membership drive, and I hope to have a challenge. So I hope that if you are a regular listener of Your Financial Choices and you've benefited from some of the programming that we've offered here to help you in some financial choices and kind of understanding the financial education that helps you, hopefully, in your day-to-day life, that you'll consider contributing and tuning in next week and hearing what the challenge will be. And I would love to hit it out of the park next week. So regular listeners, please stay tuned next week. So we'll be talking about a real estate update, which I think is really important. There have been some changes in the real estate industry that we all should be aware of. And of course, we've seen interest rates come down recently. So I think that there's going to be a lot more interest in people kind of going back into home buying, because they'll find it that it's more affordable. And then we might have people who were sitting on the sidelines getting excited about the prices if they're going up, because there's going to be more interest in the market. All right. So tonight we were talking about charitable giving. I hope it was helpful. And I want to thank Cindy and Bob for being here. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, James, for being here. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.